Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Your Health is Your Wealth with your host, Rashad Sunni El-Amin. Of course, you all know I'm a holistic educator and naturopathic practitioner. I want to thank you all for tuning in this evening. We pray everybody is well. We want to share some great health information with you this evening. But first, I want to thank Imam Alfred Muhammad for allowing me this Thursday and every Thursday at 6 o'clock this slot that I may share health information with you. And he always asks for support for the program because it does cost money. And I'll try to give you some information on that later. Again, thank you all. And I always suggest everybody have a pen and pad available to take notes. Because a lot of these information tidbits or topics that I share with you may help a friend, a coworker, a relative, or someone. So please take notes and always share whatever you learn with others. Okay, tonight my main topic is going to be about prostate health. That'll be my main topic this evening because of the fact that so many men, especially African-American men, suffer with this condition. And we need to know alternatives for us to use as opposed to conventional methods, which could create more problems. So that'll be our main topic. But first, I will give you some other information that you should take heed to, and that's talking about soft drinks, how soft drinks are sweetly destroying your body. Now, I always suggest people stay away from soft drinks, all types of sodas. It's just detrimental to your health. It's not a food that your body needs. It's not even a food. But it's something your body does not need. And we shouldn't use, we shouldn't drink sodas because you're not going to get anything good out of it. It's just going to create more health problems. And I think soft drinks is probably the most destructive so-called food or drink or whatever that there is. Now, we got to realize that we have high fructose corn syrup in a lot of these drinks. And each year, the soft drink industry produces approximately 52 gallons of sugar-sweetened and diet soda for every man, woman, and child in the USA. That's a tenfold increase from just 60 years ago. Okay? Can you imagine 52 gallons? Okay? That's a lot of soda. A lot of soda, brothers and sisters. So I don't think that we should be consuming that much, but we shouldn't be consuming it at all. But a tenfold increase is a lot. And today, nearly 75% of adolescent boys and 62% of adolescent girls consume these drinks on any given day. You see, that's a lot of boys and girls drinking these sodas. I remember when I was young, yeah, I drank sodas. And you know, at that time, we had canned sodas. And they were small, And so we might have one, but we didn't have 5 or 6 or 7 sodas a day. You see, we weren't drinking sodas like that. And I remember at the age of 21, I stopped drinking soft drinks. Yes, that was many, many years ago. Probably one of the best things I've ever done for myself. So even back then, they were showing how soft drinks were not good for you. So what is wrong with soft drinks? Well, the main villain is HFCS, which is high fructose corn syrup. This is a deadly food, brothers and sisters. High fructose corn syrup. Yes. Most soft drinks, including most juices, are sweetened with high fructose corn syrup. In fact, we'll just call it HFCS for short, represents over 40% of the sweeteners added to our diets. 40%. It's not just in soft drinks, brothers and sisters. HFCS is found in baked goods, canned fruits, jams, and jellies. And even dairy products contain HFCS. Think about that. So why do manufacturers use fructose instead of sugar? And sugar isn't all that much better, but it's slightly better than high fructose corn syrup. So why did manufacturers use fructose instead of sugar? It's easy. It's much sweeter and costs less to manufacture. And one study found that fructose is 2.3 times sweeter than sugar. That's why they use it. So you might think there's no difference between HFCS and regular sugar, which you call sucrose. But there is a big difference in how these two substances affect the body. Sucrose is made of two simple sugars, fructose and glucose, bonded in a single unit called a disaccharide. Okay? So the ingestion of this disaccharide causes the pancreas to release insulin, and this allows the cells to take up the glucose in order to make energy. While high fructose corn syrup is also made up of fructose and glucose, the amount of fructose is higher and the sugar molecules are monosaccharides, that's unbounded single molecules, rather than disaccharides. Okay? As a result, brothers and sisters, the body has difficult time using high fructose corn syrup as an energy source. Instead, ingestion of HFCS results in excess fat storage. Yes. And another important difference between sucrose and high fructose corn syrup is how they affect appetite. Both insulin and leptin, as two hormones that are related to appetite control, are sensitive to glucose. This means that when glucose is ingested, insulin and leptin are released, allowing the body to recognize when its appetite is satisfied. However, these hormones are relatively insensitive to high fructose corn syrup. And ingestion of high fructose corn syrup leads to a deficit of these appetite control hormones, resulting in an unrestrained appetite. Yes, it's like you can't stop eating. You just got to have more. And part of the reason that the body is unable to properly process high fructose corn syrup is because this substance was introduced to the human diet relatively recently. It was developed approximately 40-some years ago as a cheaper, sweeter substitute for sugar. And human beings simply don't have the tools to convert high fructose corn syrup into usable energy. And nevertheless, the food industry was more than happy to save money adding high fructose corn syrup to as many products as possible. And the obesity epidemic we are currently facing is the direct consequence of adding high fructose corn syrup to food products. I hope you're hearing this. Brothers and sisters, there's so many obese people in this world today. I just can't believe how obese people are. In my childhood, I've never seen that. Only in the freak show would I see a 400 or 500 pound man. You see, now it's like the norm. 300-400 pounds, that's like nothing nowadays. You see? So this is one of the main problems we have obesity. And there's other reasons also. Now, the dangers of bromine. Let me spell that for you. B as in boy, R-O, M as in mother, I-N-E. Bromine. It's another harmful substance on the list of soft drink ingredients. Okay? Bromine. It's a chemical element commonly used in flame retardants and pesticides. Did you hear that? It's used in flame retardants and pesticides. Bromine. Specifically, many soft drinks contain brominated vegetable oil in which atoms of bromine are added to the oil. And this oil is then mixed in soft drink to allow fat-soluble citrus flavoring to remain suspended in the liquid. And examples of such drinks include some of your favorites out there, Gatorade, Mountain Dew, yes, and AMP Energy. Yes, I know plenty of you love that Mountain Dew out there and that Gatorade and all that stuff, but this stuff is harmful. And many countries, including India and the United Kingdom, have banned the use of brominated vegetable oil. And unfortunately, the U.S. has not banned this toxic substance yet. Think about that. The United States of America. Everybody else is leading America in the fight to get rid of these toxic chemicals. So, if you go back to January 2009, there was a report, a health report, and it spoke about the dangers of bromine. And it said bromine is in the family of chemicals called halides, H-A-L-I-D-E-S, which also includes iodine, chlorine, and fluoride. You hear that? Yes? And there's no known therapeutic value for bromine, yet it is the most common toxic substance that a lot of doctors, holistic doctors, have identified in patients. Huh? And they found elevated bromine levels in nearly every patient that they tested. You see? Yes. And this one doctor, a scientist actually, Charles Hakala, he's the owner of the Hakala Research Laboratory, said that he has seen elevated bromine levels in 98% of the patients he tested. So people who drink a lot of bromine containing soft drinks will obviously have much higher bromine levels than people who don't consume those drinks. If, as Hakala says, 98% of people have elevated bromine levels, then we must be getting this chemical from other sources. So where is all this bromine coming from, brothers and sisters? Well, because bromine is often used as a fire retardant, it can be found in many common household items, such as, guess what? Mattresses, computers, furniture, and drapes. And further, bromine is used in many medications, including some inhalers and nasal sprays. So it is also used as a fumigant for termites and other pests. Are you getting this, brothers and sisters? This is what you have in yourself. In 1981, 6.3 million pounds of bromine were used in California. And by 1991, the state's rally was 18.7 million pounds. Huh? Yes. Now, I don't know what the amount of bromine being used currently used now is, but bromine is also found in many bakery products, including breads, cakes, and cookies. Ah, now you're saying to yourself, oh, God, my God, what am I to do? We'll talk about that. So when you consider all the possible sources of bromine exposure, it is no wonder bromine toxicity is occurring at epidemic levels. Yes. So how do you get the bromine out of your system? Well, there's ways to get all that bromine out of your system. In fact, detoxifying patients is one way. That's the way the doctors would do, the naturopathic doctors, and they would treat them with iodine, believe it or not. Every cell in the body utilizes iodine because both iodine and bromine are part of the halide family. They share a similar structure. And iodine is a competitive inhibitor of bromine. Therefore, in the case of bromine toxicity, taking iodine will displace the bromine so that it can be excreted. That's the way the naturopathic practitioners go about it. But this process can also go in the opposite direction now. If bromine levels are too high, iodine will be deficient. So this imbalance can only be reversed by ensuring adequate iodine levels are present. You see? Yes. So 6 to 50 milligrams a day of iodine is an adequate dosage to keep bromine levels in check. You see? And of course, brothers and sisters, it's also essential to stop ingest that contain brominated vegetable oil. Just stop drinking the doggone sodas. Okay? Stop it. Give it up. Go back to drinking natural things. You see? Now, one cautionary note, when using iodine to displace bromine, adequate salt levels must be present in the body. Contains chloride is also an effective agent to competitively inhibit bromine. You see? Yes. So, what you can do, when you use the iodine, also use approximately 1/2 to 1 teaspoon of unrefined salt per day. Okay? And of course, you know, some people say, oh, I can't use salt. Use sea salt. Okay? So, these are a few of the dangers of drinking soft drinks. What else? All right, let's keep going. I hope you're getting this. Take notes. I hope you're starting to think maybe I should give this stuff up or cut back a whole lot. You know, I was saying earlier, when we used to buy soda when we were kids, it would be a small can of soda. Now you got these big liters. I mean, people dropping 2 and 3 liters a day. That's just ridiculous. They don't drink water no more. You're just destroying your body, dehydrating it, and the phosphoric acid is eating up the bones. Yes. How about aspartame? Huh? Yes, aspartame. Now, this is a toxic sweetener. I know some of you love that artificial sweeteners. You think it's better. Oh, my God. I got news for you. Now, if the regular soft drinks are full of high fructose corn syrup and bromine, diet sodas should be safer alternative, right? Not even close. It is absolutely vital to avoid diet sodas that contain artificial sweeteners. There's no place for these substances in anyone's diet. You know, long-term use of artificial sweeteners can lead to a whole list of chronic illnesses, including obesity. Well, it's a diet soda. How's it going to create obesity? Well, it does. Not only does it create obesity, diabetes, autoimmune disorders, including multiple sclerosis, MS, thyroid problems, and guess what? The biggie, cancer. Yes, the artificial sweeteners, brother and sister. Don't let them sell you that stuff or sell you on that. Aspartame, sold under the brand names of NutraSweet and Equal, is one of the unhealthiest, hear what I'm saying, one of the unhealthiest substances you can ingest. It has no therapeutic value and is toxic to the body. Huh? Yes. Oh, boy. 2 of aspartame's 3 main components are the amino acids phenylalanine and aspartic acid, and the third ingredient is methanol, which is wood alcohol. And we get phenylalanine and aspartic acid from other food sources. However, brothers and sisters, consuming them in isolation from other amino acids can cause neurological problems, including headaches, brain fog, dizziness, and seizures. Seizures. Yes. So these amino acids can cause the brain cells to become excitable, eventually leading to the death of the cell. Therefore, these substances, as well as others, have been labeled excitotoxins. There's a book out on excitotoxins you should read. And excitotoxins have been linked to the development of serious illnesses such as Parkinson's disease, MS, that's multiple sclerosis, Alzheimer's disease, and other neurological disorders. You see? If you get a chance, get the book Excitotoxins by Dr. Russell Blaylock. Excitotoxins, the taste that kills. I highly recommend it, brothers and sisters. And the other component of aspartame, which is methanol, is no blessing either. In the body or when exposed to heat, methanol can spontaneously break down to formaldehyde, a known toxin that can cause blindness, kidney damage, organ failure, and death. Did you hear that? Yes. Oh, boy. You know, aspartame was developed by the pharmaceutical company G.D. Searle and Company and was initially approved by the Food and Drug Administration in 1974. But almost immediately, questions began to arise about the soundness of the clinical studies that had been conducted on aspartame. And further research questioned the study's validity and hinted at manipulated data. Yay! And in January 1977, strong back some time, for the first time in its history, FDA requested that the U.S. Attorney's Office begin grand jury proceedings to investigate whether indictments should be filed against Searle for misrepresenting findings, concealing facts, and making false statements in aspartame safety tests. Think about it. Now, FDA's concerns about aspartame were numerous. Searle's aspartame studies on animals were rife with problems, including reports of removing tumors from animals and discarding rather than biopsying them, failure to report internal tumors, failures to perform autopsies on animals, inaccurately reporting animals as being alive when they were dead, and vice versa, an inappropriate statistical analysis of the data. So the biggest concerns about aspartame were its propensities to form birth defects and tumors. And be assured, FDA should have followed through with its investigation and never should have approved aspartame for human consumption. Huh? Think about that. What happened next should only happen in the movies. In July 1977, the lead attorney assigned to FDA's aspartame grand jury investigation left his government job to take a position at G.D. Searle's law firm. And the investigation was never concluded. And in March 1979, the FDA accepted Searle's studies, and despite some further challenges, on July 18, 1981, aspartame was approved for use in dry foods. Now think about that. That is a shame. That is a doggone shame. You see? How wicked. You see? Now, what has been the consequence of aspartame use in food and drink? Well, brain tumors, neurological disorders, and obesity have increased at epidemic rates. All of these conditions may be related to aspartame use. And in fact, all these conditions were shown to occur in the animal studies that were misrepresented to the FDA. You see? Now think about that. Oh, I tell you, There are some wicked people in this world. And aspartame is not a safe supplement for diabetics. You know, astoundingly, Big Pharma, yeah, the big pharmacy, pharmaceutical companies, Big Pharma claims that because aspartame has no calories, it is therefore an appropriate dietary supplement for diabetics. And nothing could be further from the truth, brothers and sisters. Aspartame is particularly toxic for diabetics because it disrupts the body's normal response to glucose, which is to cause the pancreas to release insulin. And the main symptom of diabetes is high blood sugar due to insulin deregulation. Dysregulation. And therefore, aspartame is doing exactly the opposite of what diabetics need. You see? And unfortunately, even the American Diabetic Association has fallen for this propaganda and has accepted the idea that aspartame is a suitable sugar substitute for diabetics. Shame on them. So the bottom line, aspartame is not safe for diabetics or anyone else. All sources of aspartame sweetener needs to be avoided, brothers and sisters. Please take this to heart. I'm not making this up. These are facts. These are facts. Yes. And guess who was the president of Searle Company that produced aspartame? Rumsfeld, one of Bush's boys. Yes, Rumsfeld. You remember him? If you don't, look him up. How about sucralose? U-C-R-A-L-O-S-E. Sucralose is no better than aspartame. Sucralose is another widely used artificial sweetener marketed under the brand name Splenda. Oh, that sounds so nice. Splenda. Huh? That represents a multi-million dollar product for the Big Pharma cartel. And though there have been no long-term studies on the safety of sucralose, and I doubt that there will ever be one, animal studies have shown that it is associated with reduced growth rate in newborns and adults, anemia, thyroid problems, mineral deficiencies, particularly magnesium, and various organ problems. So when you look at the biochemical structure of sucralose, there's no doubt that it's a recipe for problems. And sucralose is made by replacing the hydrogen on sucrose, that's table sugar, with chlorine. And having four chlorine molecules attached to each molecule of sucralose creates a potential problem. Recall that chlorine is in the halide family, like iodine, and ingestion of one halide in large doses will competitively inhibit other halides. In this case, ingestion of large amounts of sucralose could result in severe iodine deficiency. You see? And in addition, heating chlorine causes a chemical reaction that converts the chlorine into dioxin-like chemical. Excuse me. So dioxins are some of the most toxic chemicals known to science. They are a known carcinogen and can also cause endocrine problems. So you should never ingest heated sucralose. And you should be sure that the product was never heated in its manufacturing or storage process. Better yet, just avoid it. The truth is that no artificial sweetener has ever been shown to reverse or prevent obesity. In fact, these substances trick the brain into thinking glucose is coming into the body. So if glucose were ingested, it would result in other hormones being released and cause the brain to be satiated. So when no glucose appears, a message is sent to eat more. Therefore, these artificial sweeteners actually make weight loss more difficult. Huh? Diet soda is not a healthy substance. You see? Well, if you had to choose between diet and regular soda, you're better off with regular soda, but neither one's no good. But the better plan is to just drink water. You know, sodas also cause dehydration and worsen obesity problems. You see? So drinking water is a much better choice, but and it saves you money and makes you healthier. Now, how about some healthy sweetener alternatives? One is agave. Agave comes from the agave plant. It looks like the aloe vera plant. This is a natural sweetener that looks like maple syrup. And diabetics can use it with no problem. It will not raise the sugar levels. And it's very sweet. I love it. That's one of the main sweeteners I use in my diet. Raw honey, which is completely unfiltered, unheated, and unprocessed, is an excellent natural alternative sweetener that is packed with enzymes and other nutrients. Honey loses many of its nutrients when it is heated and filtered to give it a clear appearance. But raw honey can help with digestive problems and boost appetite. It also has been used to treat stomach ulcers and acidity. I always tell people you got stomach ulcers, spoonful of raw honey. It kills the bacteria that creates the ulcer, so the succified or water that the bacteria is in. I have me a teaspoon of raw honey every day. It's a natural food. But it's got to be raw, and it should be organic. You see? Excellent healer. There's healing in raw honey. You see? Sucanat is another one, and it's a contraction of sugar cane. It's an unrefined cane sugar, but unlike processed white sugar, sucanat retains its molasses content. It is essentially pure dried sugarcane juice. The juice extracted by mechanical process is heated and cooled, at which point the brown grainy crystals are formed. The sucanat is a registered trademark of Ragus Holdings Incorporated. That's another alternative you can use. Now, one of the best alternatives is stevia. S-T-V-I-A. And I forgot to spell agave for you. Agave is A-G-A-V-E. But anyway, stevia is an herb native to subtropical and tropical regions from Western North America to South America. And as a sweetener and sugar substitute, stevia's taste has a slower onset and longer duration than sugar. Although some of its extracts may have a bitter or liquid-like aftertaste at high concentrations. But unlike artificial sweeteners, it does not spike the blood sugar at all and cause any kind of insulin reaction. So stevia is many times sweeter than sugar. So it's best consumed in small quantities. You don't need that much because it is very sweet. Maple syrup, pure 100% maple syrup, pancake syrup, maple syrup, organic if possible. Also an excellent sweetener. Yes, I love that too. I love that maple taste. Another one is xylitol. Let me spell that one for you. as in Malcolm, XYLITOL. Xylitol is a naturally occurring sugar substitute that can be found in berries, fruit, vegetables, and mushrooms. And pure xylitol is a white crystalline substance that looks and tastes like sugar. On food labels, xylitol is classified broadly as a carbohydrate and more narrowly as a polyol or sugar alcohol. However, xylitol is considered a sugar-free sweetener. Okay? And there's benefits to xylitol, too. So, friends, sisters, stay away from soft drinks. Now, if you keep drinking after I shared this with you, then, you must not care too much about your body. You see? I'm telling you. Give it up. Turn it loose, as James Brown says. Give it up and turn it loose. You see? You'll be better off. I'm telling you. Oh, I was so glad I gave that up when I was younger. You see? But I sure as heck wouldn't want to have to go through that. I don't know what I might be weighing now. What, maybe 350 or something? Had I used that? But I was always a slim guy, though. I mean, I have a fast metabolism. I actually can eat anything I want if I wanted to and not gain a pound. Yeah, that's how fast my metabolism is. But I eat very healthy, and I eat a lot of high-fiber foods. You see, those high-fiber foods, when you ingest it, it goes to the body and it comes out. You see? And I'm going to tell you something. Let me share this with you. You should know this. You know, a lot of us suffer with all kind of ailments. A lot of us suffer with all types of disease. And we run to these doctors for some drugs or something that help reverse this condition and to feel better. But all they do is give you a Band-Aid. Yeah, the drug is nothing but a Band-Aid. It's just something that suppresses something for a little while, but never goes to the root of the problem. And the problem is you have been sold on artificial everything. Artificial food, these drugs, artificial lifestyle, all this artificialness. It's nothing but the devil. I have to say it like that. Satan or Shaitan, whatever you want to call them. Artificial is not natural. You have to go back to nature. You have to go back to the natural creation if you want to get well. Now, I'm going to say this. I hope you can respect it. I don't care what your condition is, what sickness you have. I'm going to tell you what you need to do. What I would do if I had this condition, and I know people who've had these different conditions, and they reversed it by going back to the natural creation, back to nature. What do I mean? Yes, you eat what God put on the planet. Berries. Huh? Fresh nuts and seeds, the way God made it. Just if you have any condition, just eat, but just buy fresh, especially organic. Make sure it's organic. Fresh organic fruits, fresh organic greens and vegetables and nuts and seeds. You see, make fresh salads every day. Eat fruit for breakfast and lunch, and watch how your ailments disappear before you know it. They're gone because your body recognizes what is in the natural creation. Your cells recognize an apple. They recognize a plum or a banana. They recognize greens, tomatoes, cucumbers, and all these other natural foods. Recognize nuts and seeds. They don't recognize DD, Dunkin' Donuts, Drake's Cakes. Huh? Miss Debbie. Huh? And all the other processed condiments and foods and that, well, I can't even call it food. All these processed so-called foods that you buy from the supermarket in boxes and packages that have no life in it, no enzymes in it, no water in it. It's just dead food. Dead food. It doesn't feed your cells. You see? When you eat fresh fruits, it's got live enzymes in it that have been solar charged by the sun. It's got water in it. Yes, fruits have water in it. Vegetables have water in it. That's why you stay hydrated when you eat these foods. You see? Then you must drink good, clean water. I always suggest distilled water. But you got to have water. If you want to make fresh vegetable juices, you can take those same vegetables and juice them. You see? That will send the nutrients straight to your cells. You want to have the fiber. So eat it. Eat your apples. Eat your plums. Eat your greens. Just don't cook none for 2 months. And you'll be like brand new money. Believe me, you'll be like brand new money. You don't have to suffer with these diseases. No doctor's going to tell you this. They'll lose all their patience. You see? They'll tell you you're crazy. That doesn't work. Don't even think about it. Go on and take this drug. It'll help you. And then you see the commercial. You're taking that same drug, and you see a person smiling like they're all happy, like this thing is really benefiting them. And then they name 20, 25 side effects. You're like, oh, my God. Is it worth it? But there's no side effects from the fruits and the vegetables. And a lot of you say, well, I'm allergic to certain fruits and greens and vegetables. And no, you are allergic to the pesticides that's in them. That's why you get organic. Do you understand? I hope you're taking this to heart, brothers and sisters. Don't take this thing lightly. Don't take it lightly. I'm telling you what you can do to help yourself. You can heal. You got to become your own doctor. Now, I don't go to these doctors for nothing. Eat right, do right, live right. I don't drink alcohol, smoke cigarettes, use drugs or medicinal drugs, any of that stuff. Because it doesn't belong there. That creates problems. I don't eat none of that man-made concoctions. I eat natural every day and feel great every day. See, because when you eat right, you have strong immunity. And the main cause of disease is weakened immunity. And weakened immunity comes from those things you put in your body that your body doesn't even recognize. And sugar is one of the main things that weakens your immunity. Yes. You know, you have antibodies in your immunity. And every time you ingest sugar, 50% of your antibodies go down. That's part of your immunity. And where you find the largest amount of your immunity is in your gut. Yes, in your gut. So you better think about what you're putting in your gut. A weakened immunity will create problems for you, sickness and disease. Addressing this, brother and sister, I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to help you. I'm not making any of this up. I'm telling you the truth that the doctors will never tell you. You understand? And even some of these fake doctors on TV or these TV shows will never tell you. So, try the natural way. Go back to what God gave you, not what some man gave you that's doing you no good. Oh, my God, time is flying by. Was it 10 minutes to 8? Oh, well, I'm supposed to get to the topic here. The main topic is prostate health. You see? Let's talk about this. We'll try to cover as much as possible. I think we'll have about a half hour or so. I can cover a good portion of this. Okay? So let's look at what we can do for good prostate health. Now, most of the time, men are completely unaware of their prostate gland, which is a small organ that is vital to male sexual health. And unfortunately, while largely unnoticed, the prostate can be the site of major health concerns for men. It can become enlarged, inhibiting the flow of urine. It can become infected and inflamed, causing fevers and discomfort. And finally, the prostate can become cancerous, which can kill. Yes, prostate cancer is big. In fact, next to skin cancer, prostate cancer is the most common type of cancer among American men. And the National Cancer Institute estimates that in 2014, I believe, it says, yes, that about 225,000 new cases of prostate cancer will be diagnosed, and there will be 32,050 deaths from it. And this is in America. And still it receives less attention and less funding than many other types of cancer. Yes. So, enlarged prostate pressures the bladder. Now, the prostate, as I said, is a walnut-sized gland in the male reproductive system located just beneath the bladder. Its function is to store and secrete fluid, which nourishes and maintains the appropriate acidity for semen, S-E-M-E-N. You all know what that is. And one of the most common problems that can develop with the prostate, which affects many men over the age of 50, is called benign prostatic hypertrophy, or BPH for short. In fact, the older men become, the more BPH seems to affect them. So put simply, brothers and sisters, well, for brothers, sisters don't suffer from this condition. BPH refers to an increase in the size of the prostate due to an increase in the number of cells in the gland. And the prostate gland surrounds the urethra, which is the tube that leads from the bladder to the genitals for urination. And when sufficiently enlarged, the prostate presses against the bladder and compresses the urethra, impeding the flow of urine through the urethral canal. So BPH is not cancerous now, but it can cause a great deal of discomfort for men who suffer from the condition. And when an enlarged prostate gland impedes the flow of urine, men will often complain of having a weak urinary stream or a difficult time emptying the bladder. Furthermore, men with BPH frequently feel an urge to urinate due to the enlarged prostate pressing against their bladder. And if the bladder does not empty completely with urination, bladder infections and kidney damage can occur. You hear that? Yes. And although BPH is not treated as a life-threatening condition, the symptoms can be severe enough to radically affect the quality of man's life. Did you hear that? Yes. Now, this is a problem. This is a major problem for a lot of men. And you don't want to have kidney problems. There's too much of that. So the constant urge to urinate can cause men to wake up numerous times during the night to try to empty their bladder. And people who are chronically sleep deprived have an increased risk of heart disease as well as other serious conditions. Huh? Think about that. And BPH is most often diagnosed by taking a thorough case history and checking the patient's prostate gland with a rectal examination, which I'm pretty sure brothers, you don't like. I know one thing, I don't want nobody putting their fingers where they don't belong. But anyway, if BPH is diagnosed, the patient should start by avoiding antihistamines and decongestant medications, which can worsen the condition. Huh? Yeah. Hope your doctor told you that. And more severe cases of BPH can be treated with medications such as alpha blockers, which is Cordura and Hytrin, which help to temporarily relieve the symptoms. But unfortunately, these medications do not treat the underlying cause of BPH and do not stop the progressive enlargement of the gland. So the prostate gland requires male hormones known as androgens to function optimally. These drugs, boy, I tell you. So the main hormones that regulate prostate function are testosterone and dehydrotestosterone, that's DHT, and estrogen. So DHT is thought to be the hormone that causes prostatic enlargement. You see? Testosterone converts to DHT through an enzyme called 5-alpha reductase. And to combat this, a class of medications called 5-alpha reductase inhibitors, which is Alvedart and Proscor, blocks the conversion of testosterone to DHT. But these 5-alpha reductase inhibitors provide little relief for the vast majority of men with BPH. And furthermore, these expensive medications can result in a decreased libido. So much for the drugs. And if these medications fail to correct the problem, brothers and sisters, doctors may perform surgery to open up the urethra. And this surgery is called a transurethral resection of the prostate, or TURP.
And this surgery is only indicated for severe cases of BPH where such measures are necessary to avert serious health issues such as kidney failure. Huh? And listen, diet plays a critical role in prostate health. And SAD diet, S-A-D, which is the standard American diet, contains too many refined foods, including refined sugar, flour, oil, and salt. So it's important to remove these devitalized foods as they set the stage for BPH. Clean up your diet. Add some beneficial supplements. I just mentioned a while ago how you got to go back to nature, go back to the natural creation and eat from it. Anyway, prostatitis. Prostatitis is prostate inflammation. Now, prostatitis is an inflammatory condition that can cause painful and difficult urination. And men with prostatitis also can suffer from a persistent, urgent need to urinate and pain in the abdomen, the groin, penis, the testicles, the rectum, all lower back. Whoa, that's too much. God almighty, wouldn't want to have to go through that. And prostatitis can also result from infection. And approximately 15% of prostatitis cases are caused by acute bacterial infection of the prostate gland, which can be associated with a fever, chills, nausea, vomiting, and a poor appetite. In addition, prostatitis can also be caused by an infection of the bladder, sometimes brought on by trauma from activities such as biking or horseback riding. Huh? You ever ride a horse? Up and down, blah, blah, blah. I used to ride a horse when I was young. I really enjoyed it. And I love biking. Anyway, in these cases, the tetracycline class of antibiotics, which is like minocycline and doxycycline, has proven effective, they say. And another class of medications, the quinolones, like Cipro or Levaquin, also can be effective for treating these symptoms. However, some men who take numerous courses of potent antibiotics for prostatitis and suffer adverse effects like nausea, diarrhea, vomiting, and headaches from overuse of those antibiotics, and yet the condition persists. So sometimes the solution is a simple one. You know, naturopaths have treated many men with prostatitis by simply having them rehydrate adequate amounts of water. Dehydration can be insidious, and it is vital to guard against it. So to be sure you are getting enough water, simply take your weight in pounds and divide it by two, and the resulting number is the daily amount of water to ingest in ounces. Okay? And also eliminate liquids that enhance dehydration, such as sweetened beverages. We just talked about those soft drinks and everything. You see? And I've seen an association between the artificial sweetener aspartame and prostatitis in some individuals. In these cases, eliminating aspartame, reversing dehydration, and correcting nutrient imbalances have been successful at eliminating prostatitis. And some men who develop chronic prostatitis have no identifiable cause, and conventional medicine has little to offer these individuals. So for many of these patients, a holistic approach can be more successful, brothers and sisters. Are you hearing this? Brothers, I hope you're taking notes. Yeah, men. Okay? Take notes. It is estimated that between 1 in 3 and 1 in 6 men will develop prostate cancer at some time in their lives. And the disease is even more common as men get older. And up to 70% of men age 80 and older have it. And however, statistics show that of men with prostate cancer, just 1 in 35 died from it. It's a very slow-grown cancer. And you'll die of something else before you even die of prostate cancer. Yes, especially in older men. So these statistics indicate that most prostate cancers are slow-grown. However, brothers and sisters, our present knowledge of the disease makes it nearly impossible to predict which cancers will grow slowly and which will be fast-growing. And typically, after age 50, men are advised to get a yearly rectal exam and PSA test, which assesses the level of prostate-specific antigen and enzyme secreted by the gland. But they did have a report not too long ago about these prostate tests, okay? And they were saying that the rectal exam was not the best way. And I don't blame them. I know men don't like that. I know I sure as heck wouldn't want nobody putting their finger where it don't belong. But anyway, if the manual rectal exam is abnormal or the PSA level is elevated, the patient will be referred to a urologist for further workup. Prostate cancer can only be diagnosed by a biopsy of the prostate gland. It is the reading of these tissue samples that confirms whether the patient has a malignancy. Now, I have a problem with biopsies because if you have cancer in a certain organ and you do a biopsy, when you stick that needle in there, those cancer cells can come out and spread through your body. Did you know that? Yes. Anyway, there are some pitfalls of prostate testing. So, fortunately, there are many pitfalls involved with prostate testing. First, the PSA level can be elevated for a number of reasons besides cancer, including BPH and prostatitis. You know, I'm not 100% in support of the procedures to biopsy the prostate gland, like I said earlier. So the biopsy procedure removes samples of prostate tissue, but most times this biopsy is done blindly, meaning the tissue is taken from random parts of the gland. Even if certain areas of the prostate are suspected of being abnormal, the biopsy procedure is still unreliable as to whether or not the urologist will get a sample of the diseased tissue. Also, the biopsy itself has the potential to spread cancer. To spread cancer, as I said. And if the majority of prostate cancers are slow grown, remember, only 3% of affected men die from it. And it's possible that a biopsy will cause the abnormal cancerous cells to be released from the gland. And some men develop chronic inflammation of the prostate after a biopsy. Now, did your doctor tell you that before you got your biopsy, brother? The biopsy of the prostate gland should be undertaken only after careful consideration. Okay? Yes. And it shouldn't be done in no half-assed manner. I don't think this is good medicine, brothers. Now, PSA testing is overused. The most basic tenet of medicine is that you need an accurate diagnosis in order to formulate an effective treatment plan. This leads to the following question. If you don't do the biopsy, how can you diagnose prostate cancer? And the answer is, you can't. And that is where the PSA test comes into play. If the PSA level is elevated, it may signal prostate cancer. So does everyone need an annual PSA test? No. In the UK, that's the United Kingdom, PSA testing is not used widely, yet a comparison of prostate cancer incidence in the U.S. and the U.K. found the intensive PSA screening in the U.S. resulted in dramatic increases in prostate cancer incidence without a significant change in mortality between the two countries. So this would indicate that PSA screening in the U.S. has not given us what we hoped it would, a decrease in the mortality rate for prostate cancer. And while what mass PSA screening does is create a population of men who now have to undergo painful diagnosis and treatments without evidence of these therapies changing the final outcome. And furthermore, looking at the annual age-adjusted cancer death rates among males from 1930, and this statistic is from 1930 to 2005, shows the death rate for prostate cancer has not gone down. It has increased. That means that over the last 75 years, therapies, radiation, chemotherapy, hormonal blockade, and surgery have been ineffective for most people. You hear that? I believe that the doctors are overusing the PSA testing to diagnose a relatively common illness, prostate cancer, that has a fairly low 3% mortality rate. If we had better therapies to treat the advanced disease, I would be in favor of universal PSA screening. Until that day comes, I'm against it. And this is not to say the PSA test doesn't provide useful information. It does. And if PSA level is elevated or rising at an unduly high rate, that could be a message to the patient to improve his diet, exercise, and detoxify. Now, risk factors for prostate cancer. Age is the single largest risk factor for prostate cancer. The older you are, the more likely you will develop it. However, there's also a hereditary component. If you have a first-degree relative with prostate cancer, your risk goes up considerably, brothers. So there is some controversy over whether or not elevated levels of the androgen hormones, testosterone, and DHT are risk factors for prostate cancer. If elevated levels in androgens such as testosterone were responsible for causing prostate cancer, we should see prostate cancer occurring in young men whose testosterone levels are the highest, but the opposite is true. Prostate cancer is more common in older men with less testosterone. Although the role of estrogen in causing prostate cancer is not 100% clear, but it has been shown that elevated estrogen levels in a man are associated with a myriad of problems, including atherosclerosis, blood clots,
arthritis, and prostate problems, including prostate cancer. So I believe elevated estrogen levels are directly correlated to the development of prostate cancer. You see? So I hope you're listening to this. In fact, research has shown that estrogen therapy increased the rate of prostate cancer in rats. Okay? Yes. So what causes elevated estrogen levels? The culprits are many. Obesity, eating a diet of refined foods, that have estrogen-like hormones added to the animal feed, exposure to pesticides and other toxins that have estrogen-like effects in the body. So assessing estrogen levels in men can be easily done with blood tests. And if estrogen levels are elevated, cleaning up the diet, detoxifying, and taking supplements can help. But you got to drink adequate amounts of water, brothers. Drinking water can help prevent many issues with the prostate. And maintaining a healthy diet will also give relief for prostate problems. You see? Remember that all prostate diseases are inflammatory, provoked illnesses. A poor diet feeds these problems by introducing devitalized substances that cause inflammation. Conversely, a healthy diet is anti-inflammatory. So avoid additives and foods and stick to the real foods from nature. Okay? Yes. Go back to the natural creation. Go back to eating properly. And these foods will be anti-inflammatory. Also, taking the right supplements can help improve and prevent prostate problems. The prostate, like the thyroid, is an endocrine gland and needs proper nutrients for optimal functioning. So by the time problems have developed, the prostate tissue has become very inflamed. So taking the right supplements can help to reverse this condition and allow the prostate gland to resume its normal function. You see? Yes. And there's some good nutrients out there that they have in combinations, not only to help the prostate heal, but also to optimize its function. So here's some of the important supplements that should be included. And let me read these off to you, brothers. Number one is beta-cystosterol saw palmetto. Saw palmetto is S-A-W and then P-A-L-M-E-T-T-O. This is a very good herb. Pomegranate, I mean, studies are showing the pomegranate concentrated juice, the pomegranate powders are very effective for prostate problems. And pomegranate is P, as in Peter, O-M-E-G-R-A-N-A-T-E. You know what pomegranates are? Those Chinese apples. Boswellia, B as in boy, O-S-W-E-I-A, another herb which is powerful. Pumpkin seeds, you know, the prostate needs zinc. So men, you should eat raw pumpkin seeds, not the roasted ones, the raw ones that you can find in your health food stores. Mix them with some raisins or something. They taste good like that, you see? So raw pumpkin seeds, not with the salt and all that stuff on it. The other one is Pygium africanum, or African Pygium. And Pygium is P-Y, P as in Peter, Y, G as in George, E-U-M, and africanum is A-F-R-I-C-A-N-U-M. Also powerful herb. And the other one is stinging nettle, T-I-N-G-I-N-G, and nettle is N-E-T-T-L-E. So you can get this, the combination of these in supplement form, and has proven effective for many suffering from prostate problems. These nutrients can make dramatic changes in the function of the prostate gland. Let me check the time, brothers and sisters. I got about 5 more minutes before we sign off. So I hope you're taking notes, because this is very important. And I have a lot more to say about this, but we have to try to rush through the rest of this, okay? But anyway, you lessen your chance of developing prostate problems by eating better, maintaining adequate hydration, and correcting your nutritional imbalances, you see? So look at the holistic approach for treating prostate problems. And stay away from beer. Beer creates prostate problems. And some of you out there love to drink so much beer, it's a shame. I see people going home with cases of beer. Or you just can't seem to get enough. You need a cold one. Yeah, you don't need a cold one, all right. Stuff nuts. Oh, let me not even go there. I don't want to say something I shouldn't be saying. Okay. Anyway, so that's something we got to keep in mind, brothers and sisters. I mean, well, brothers, basically. A couple other things that may also help. And that would be boron, B-O-R-O-N. This trace element slows the growth of harmful prostate cells while allowing healthy prostate cells to grow. And higher boron levels lower the risk of prostate illness by reducing intracellular calcium signals and storage. And in one recent large study, men with the highest boron levels at half the risk of prostate illness compared to those with the lowest levels. Another good thing is lycopene, L-Y-C-O-P-E-N-E. And this carotenoid antioxidant substantially reduces prostate problems. It reduced PSA levels in men by an amazing 17%. And the higher the PSA level, the more likely men are to have prostate illness. And there was a study in 2008 that showed it slowed illness progression in men. It protects healthy prostate cells from damage. And it's 9 times stronger than vitamin E as an antioxidant. And Harvard University researchers found men who have abundant levels are 45% less likely to develop prostate illness. And a Dr. Omar Kukoc, an oncologist, reports men given lycopene had smaller prostates than those given a placebo. The other thing, very important, is zinc, as I said, by the pumpkin seeds, because zinc is an important nutrient in promoting and maintaining prostate health. How important? Your prostate uses 10 times more zinc than any other organ in your body. And research shows zinc deficiencies contribute, importantly, to prostate enlargement. For example, studies have found that an inflamed prostate contains only 10% of the zinc found in a healthy prostate gland. So your body also needs zinc to make sex hormones, which helps give you increased desire and potency. So these are some of the things that you need to take the supplement with, okay, that have proven to help the prostate, okay? So you men out there, got something out of this. You see? So, let me just say this. Change your diet. If you have prostate cancer, go back to the natural creation. Eat from nature, like I said. Just eat fresh foods, the vegetables. Leave the meat alone, because meat feeds cancer. Sugar feeds cancer. Just go back for a couple months. Eat fresh fruits and fresh vegetables every day for a few months, and you will see that things will reverse. Now, some of you, I can't do that. Well, then you have to suffer. So I'd rather see you make the change. Again, brothers and sisters, I thank you so much for tuning in. I pray you all got something out of this and took notes so you can share with your family members, your co-workers and friends and neighbors. Again, till next week, we'll talk again, and there'll be a different topic, and maybe something for the sisters this time. And I thank you. Peace be on you all. Assalamu alaikum.